Think big. Think positive. Never show any sign of weakness. Always go for the throat. Buy low, sell high. Fear, that's the other guy's problem. Nothing you have ever experienced can prepare you for the unbridled carnage you're about to witness. Right. Super Bowl, the World Series, they don't know what pressure is. In this building, it's either kill or be killed. Right. You make no friends in the pits and you take no prisoners.
No prisoners.
1 minute, you're up half a million in soybeans, and the next, boom, your kids don't go to college and they've repossessed your Bentley. Are you with me?
Hello and welcome to Turner's Take Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Turner, author of Turner's Take Newsletter. I'm a broker here at StoneX. We work with producers and consumers, hedgers and speculators, anything in the ag, energy, livestock, or anything to do with the futures and commodity markets. We also are in the OTC and structured products. I do a lot of consulting work too. If you have any questions about what I do here, we work with clients in the commodity markets. You can give me a call at 312-706-7610 or shoot an email at craig.turner@stonex.com. All my contact information is in the show notes. If you like the podcast, please go to iTunes, give us a positive review. Also, feel free to refer us to anyone you know for the podcast. And if you want to check out the newsletter, just go to turnerstake.com. So that is the intro. Let's get into the news of the week. Big news this week has been the Federal Reserve. On the macro side, they raised interest rates 50 basis points, so it's or 0.5%, and they're going to try to fight inflation. I want to say inflation based on the CPI last year, 2021, was almost 7% in the United States, 5% in Canada, and 4%, 5%, 6% in a lot of the developed nations around the world. So that is a big concern right now. We're trying to see the Fed do that. The jobs numbers recently have not been good. Economic growth has not been great. And there is this risk going on, or unfortunately, this thought that we could see some stagflation, which means low growth. In the last U.S. GDP number is actually negative. You get two negative quarters in a row and you're in a recession. So that's number one. And then if you have inflation as you have a stagnated economy, that is stagflation. And that is really, other than a depression or some kind of financial collapse, which would be worse, the next bad thing would be something like stagflation. It's tough to get out of. You got to raise rates high to get inflation under control. And as you're raising the rates, the cost of doing business more is higher. Economic growth slows down. So then you have this low economic growth or negative economic growth and prices are going up. It's not good for anyone. And the problem is that after years of low rates and too much spending, it's hard to get out of that cycle without getting aggressive with interest rate hikes. It's kind of, fortunately, it's just the way it is to get out of it. So that's the best the Fed and central planners can do. So that's where we are now. I think the stock market, the Dow, is down like 1,000 points today. Commodities are still kind of holding in there. And that really has more to do with tight supply and more than anything, and also strong demand for some of them. So it's, but the supply side is really a big issue here. And we're not seeing the kind of price rationing that we were kind of hoped to. The number one market that is really, especially in the ag space, that's really outpacing everyone at the moment is the wheat market. So the latest on wheat, we had a big wheat podcast last week on spring wheat. And I'm going to touch on spring wheat too, but let's talk about winter wheat for a minute here. India and Pakistan, their production is probably going to be lower than people realize. Pakistan was probably going to just hold their own this year, maybe export a little bit, and now they may import. The big one is India, because we thought they were going to have about 110, 111, 112 million metric tons. India consumes just under 100 million domestically, which means they would have been able to export about, 10, 11, 12 million metric tons. And I want to say the losses in the Black Sea are about 17 million metric tons of kind of lost export that we really needed. So, we could have made back a big chunk of the Black Sea with India alone. And the problem is they're good. Their crop got off to a very good start and they planted a lot. And that's where we got these high estimates. But the finishing weather there, and which really affected the later planted wheat, it's too hot and dry for too long, right? Common theme around here. And what ended up happening is, the first estimates from the government have lowered the wheat crop from about 111 million metric tons to 105 million metric tons. And it's most likely go lower. It's going to be a small crop, get smaller type situation. And the thing is, if we start getting into the high 90s, then India is going to be net-net. They'll use what they consume and probably not really export anything. And there was some concern that India might have export bans. I haven't seen that hit the wire yet. Maybe hitting as I'm recording this, especially the way the market reacted today in wheat. But there's a real concern that there's going to be a shortage. Now, here's the thing. If we start confirming this smaller crop in India and Australia and Canada already has tight stocks. Australia and Argentina have already, kind of sold out or will be selling out. India can't make up, and we can't get more wheat out of Ukraine, which I don't see happening in the next couple of months based on what's going on between them and Russia. I think what's going to happen here is the world between now and Northern Hemisphere harvest, so late summer, early fall, the world is going to have to really depend on US and Europe, the EU, for any kind of export. And so we sh I mean, in theory, when I look at the balance sheets and what that means in the short term, that could very well be a test and a breakthrough of not just this year's highs, but challenging some all-time highs. Now, I know some of the markets really went crazy in 2007. I don't know if we'll get there, but other than those prices, these markets could run higher. It's gonna get, and like I said last week, wheat is mostly used for human food consumption. It's not like corn and soybeans, canola, rapeseed, palm oil, like a lot of those other markets, those other grain and oilseed markets are also used for feed, or energy, that you don't need to survive, right? But you do need the most basic calories, whether that be a wheat-based diet, a corn-based diet, a rice-based diet. And the corn that we produce in the United States, most of it is industrial use, whether it be or feed use. The corn, the field corn, we eat sweet corn, which has nothing to do with really has nothing to do with the corn we talk about on the board. But that field corn, and you can grind it up and make cornmeal, and I'm sure it goes into, I don't know, probably goes into hold on one second here. I just got a call coming in. So, anyways, corn, it usually goes into meal, and the meal makes flour and tortillas, and it's blended with other things, and it's not the kind of corn we're talking about for ethanol and feed. So I don't think that's so so that's different. But the other oil seeds, a lot of it's used for feed. So if it has to do with rice, if it has to do with the corn that is edible for human consumption or wheat that's edible for human consumption, like those are the most basic calories you can find around the world. And then the developed countries are probably the people who trade the commodity markets or in commodity desks and listen to this podcast. You probably have a higher protein diet, I'm gonna guess, if you're listening to this. And but for other parts of the world, especially developing parts of the world, are very, I mean, talking about very low GDP and income thresholds here, where we're only talking like that, average, nations that have average nominal incomes of a couple of $1,000 a year, they're probably not eating meat or as much high protein as someone, let's say, from maybe the higher income groups of like the United States or Western Europe or Japan or even China and other places around the other na developed nations around the world. So it is a very big deal, especially for nations that have maybe an economy that isn't as developed, where the citizens of that population are as wealthy. And not only are they helping feed that nation or subsidizing it, know, these calories that they're basing it off of is through wheat. And that is, and that's the issue. And that's where things get crazy because, or can be, right? No, and I don't need to, you know, I can point back to the Arab Spring and other, in other situations where, you know, if food gets tight, it's a serious issue. And quite honestly, wheat is probably the one commodity out there that, you know, you just don't want to see a shortage of. You know, it's one thing to have a shortage in gasoline. I mean, it'd be a real pain, but I would think people, you know, and we've seen that in the past, but the shortage in food or in wheat, that would be a much bigger deal. So anyways, the market is going to be concerned about that. And, you know, right now we saw today, energy, I think, was lower at one point. Stock market took a hit. All the commodity markets took a hit, but wheat stayed strong because we've got the planting delays and it, you know, the India deal. And now the market's realizing there isn't a ton of wheat to go around between now and next harvest. And we need a good harvest. We need, you know, it sounds like Europe and Russia. It sounds like the Eastern Hemisphere, the Northern Hemisphere, Eastern Hemisphere. So Europe and Asia, that Russian area, Ukraine, former Soviet Union, does have very good conditions for wheat. The United States doesn't at the moment, and neither does Canada. So it's okay, but it's not great. And, you know, different areas and different varieties of wheat are doing better. The worst is probably hard red winter wheat in the Western Belt or Southwest. The winter wheat in the Eastern Corn Belt of the United States actually looks pretty good, but we're having delays still. We're still having delays in North Dakota, which plants half the United States spring wheat. That has not gotten better since we talked last week. And Canada is going to be late planting too. Now, I do think they've gotten a lot of snow and moisture, and that's going to be very good for the Canadian crops. So I'm happy for those farmers. And that should be good. But, you know, we are getting late in the calendar here, and that's going to put weather premium in, and also going to have to price ration. You know, basically the market has to price wheat high enough where the only buyers at this point are those people who need it now that can't wait till next harvest. And it's going to be basically wheat for consumption only, human consumption only, no other kind of feed or specialty needs. And that's just the way the market's going to have to and price itself. So let's also jump into corn here. It looks like the corn in South America, that second crop, is going to be big, but not as big as expected. The estimates may come down a little bit in Brazil. Plus, with all the cold weather and late planting, that's not so great for U.S. corn. So corn's going to be supportive here. It's funny. I work with a lot of producers in corn in the United States. And, you know, these conversations I have is like, you know, these prices are high. Old crops around 8, new crops in the low 7s. But like, you know, and there's this thought where we kind of have to sell, right? And or should be selling, and yet no one wants to, right? So then what do you do? I'm not too sure at the moment. I think that I would like to start putting in hedges. If I could start building a $7 floor in corn, whether that be buying put spreads and selling call spreads, I kind of like it. Some guys, maybe we put the put spreads on now. And if we get another rally in the summer, we put on the short call spreads maybe a little bit later in the season. You know, if we do get a run up, maybe if old crop goes up to 850 and new crop makes a run at 8, maybe that's the play. And then you buy the put spreads ahead of time just in case the market collapses. Maybe you kind of leg into it that way. But there's got to be, I think, a good way for starting to put corn in some kind of floor. And with soybeans, kind of the same way, I'm thinking. You know, maybe we can protect $14 soybeans on new crop with spreads now, and maybe down the road look to, when we get closer to, you know, June and July, maybe look to use any kind of summer rallies to sell those call spreads into on the hedge side. On the consumer side, if I'm an end user, I'd probably just be buying whatever I can right now to get myself through the summer and not really put on any long-term hedges, because if, you know, eventually the markets do come down. So I think the consumer side is still looking hand to mouth. And the thing is with the markets, you don't know when the consumers have enough coverage to wait until next harvest. And honestly, usually it's at that point that the market starts to break. So that'll be something to keep an eye on too, or look for signals with. As far as the spreads go, I still like bear spreading September versus December corn. Right now we're getting close to a 20-cent carry. It gets to 20, 25-cent carry. That's usually attractive level. Most years, that spread will, by the end of August, will come back into a carry. And it's at a, in an inverse right now. So I may have said carry earlier, but that market, September versus D's corn, it's almost a 20 to 25-cent inverse, not a carry. And it'll usually go to a 10-cent carry by the end of August. Usually, not always, but a lot of times it does. Because September, even though it's an old crop month, it eventually becomes a new crop month with all the corn down south, and they'll try to sell that early planted corn, early harvested corn, to get an old crop inflated price instead of having to take a new crop depressed price. If that Sep Dece is trading at an inverse, which it is now. So the only It can run. I have seen it run up to 50 inverse in years where we've had drought. I think in 12 it went up to 50, but that's usually a rare case. But that's the risk on those things. So I still like that too. As far as okay, so that's wheat, that's soybeans, that corn, canola. Canola and oil seeds. We had the Indonesian ban, and and they basically said we're going to stop exporting. Palm oil. And the thing is, Indonesia produce, I think they consume about 16 million metric tons. But they export like 28 million metric tons. So their production's like 44 or 45 million. They banned exports of palm oil because cooking oil and inflation and everything happened all over the world. And the politicians, the government basically said, okay, we'll ban exports and it'll bring prices down. The thing is, not only will that eventually bring prices down, but it's just going to flood the market. They export, not twice as much as they use, but almost twice as much as they use. So not only will they flood the market eventually, they're not going to have a place to store all this palm oil. Like, I don't think Indonesia has the storage for 28 million metric tons when they only consume domestically 16 million metric tons. So I think that ban is going to be short-lived, but in the meantime, there's no sunflower out there for export. The rapeseed oil in Europe is tight. Canada has tight supplies of canola, so that's all done. So all you really have is soybean oil, and soybean oil is trading 80 cents. I mean, the front month went up to 87 or 88 last month. I mean, if this keeps up, we could see it be a dollar by, the heights of the summer if we get a weather rally in the soybean market. And it's just one of these things where we need a good crop cycle for all the global oil seeds to get us back into some kind of range. Now, when I take a look at some kind of normal trading range or even close to it, when I take a look at the supply and demand tables for old crop and new crop, and you just take, what you think are average yields and average acres, and keep demand, supply and the demand sign constant, it's usually increasing by like a percentage or two. And you start to do all that, it takes us probably one full season to go from very tight to just adequate, barely adequate, on the line of adequate and tight, and then another season to get burdensome again. So it's a 2-year process to, with some pretty good weather and acres and yields, to get corn. I mean, in the fours again, to get soybeans under 10, to get wheat, to 6. It takes that long now when I'm doing the math and looking at scenarios. So if I'm a farmer, I would start looking into selling something for 2023. Definitely start to hedge or make some kind of sales for this new crop. If I am a consumer, I'm probably more, my only concern as a consumer or an end user or a buyer of commodities is if we run out this summer, or if we have another bad crop and not just having it there, having it available. So I do think there is some advantages of using the commodity markets to buy calls or hedge yourself a little bit for the financial exposure. But my only real concern is just actually having supply later on this summer before the northern hemisphere harvest. So that's where we are, whether it be, canola, soybeans, any of the three major wheat contracts or corn. Things are going to be volatile. We're having a late spring. Could affect yields. We've got very tight stocks, uncertainty in Ukraine and Russia, uncertainty now in the Indian crop, uncertainty in the Brazilian corn crop. And it's just going to set up for some pretty big wild swings. I know everything seems kind of like it's been going up lately, but we're going to put in this crop. And when this crop gets planted, we will see profit taking. And we've got that WASDE coming up on May 12th. Would not be surprised. We have not had one of those 2 or 3 day big corrections. You know what I'm talking about. It's the dollar down in soybeans. It'd probably be like a dollar down in wheat. The 50 to 60 cent sell off in corn, where it's 2 days and everyone's wondering, and all the stories coming out, is the grain market, is the rally over? Probably isn't. We just have, and when you get these kind of prices and uncertainty, you get those kind of flushes, those 2 or 3 day sales. And I wouldn't be surprised, A, if that happens sooner rather than later. And two, it's probably, unless unless war ends in Ukraine and Russia, or everyone's wrong about the Indian situation, the Brazil situation, we probably come back. Another one thing that would completely kill the commodity market on the demand side would be a deep recession, right? And shutdowns around the world. I mean, that could really, hurt some things. But on the energy side, we're not drilling. There's no. I don't see what's gonna, and demand still stays kind of strong here. And then with the grain markets, demand's pretty constant, and we just don't have the supply, or we're gonna may run out, or not run out, get very tight. So that's where we are. If you are a farmer, if you are an end user, if you're a trader, you want to talk about how we can either, hedge for your business, your farm, or maybe try to place some of this volatility in the summer, spring, late spring and summer, let me know. Number's 312-706-7610. Email craig.turner@stonex.com. Thanks for listening, everyone. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out anytime, and good luck out there.
This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniel's Trading Broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniel's Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others. Due to various factors such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, and other factors, such trading may result in the initiation or liquidation of positions that are different from or contrary to the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniel's Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniel's Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims made by such systems or services.